Hey guys, and welcome to episode 48 of Dad Knows Best. I am Harrison Mudge, father of one, and today is a very, very special episode. We're actually recording on, firstly, my birthday. I'm the dizzying age of 31 years old now. Whew, time flies when you're having fun. But it's also Father's Day, and as a Father's Day treat, I thought we would bring none other than my father onto the show. So today, I would like to proudly announce or introduce, should I say, my father, Mark Mudge, on the mics. How's it going, Dad?
Hello, everybody. I can't believe it. 48 of these episodes have you done so far?
48 and counting. That's absolutely incredible. They fly by.
Well, I'm very pleased to be here, sitting next to my son.
How does it feel to, one, be recording a podcast, and two, be recording a video podcast? For anyone that's listening, we also do a video version of this on YouTube.
Okay.
So they can subscribe to Dad Knows Best on YouTube, please.
I have to say, this is my first podcast. We've probably done a little bit of, as you know, play guitar and do a bit of music and mics and things like that, open mics.
That's why you look so comfortable with a mic in front of you.
But I'm certainly no Peter Crouch. But so it's good to be here anyway. Thanks for having me.
Not a problem. So we'll dive straight into it because I think we've got plenty that we can talk about, but we'll keep it on topic of of fatherhood and parenting. But I want to take it way back to, so you're a proud father of three, me being the middle one, and as everyone knows, being the middle son is the hardest. But tell me what it was like, tell the listeners and viewers what it was like going through the first birth, so Jack, my older brother. What was the labor like? Tell me everything from, was he planned? To what was it like up to the labor? Was it chaos? Because anyone that's been listening to this show for a while knows, for me, we had a whole positive birth planned, and Emmy wanted.
You were very organized, I have to say.
Well, we were, and then it all just kind of went to shit in the end.
Did it? Yeah, no, you're probably more organised than me and your mother. although you said that, to think back to the birth is a long time. You got to remember, I'm getting Alzheimer's now, I'm getting older. But yeah, that does seem a long time ago, because, what's Jack now? What's your bro? Is it 34?
He's 34, yeah.
Oh, wow, yeah, so best part 35 years ago, so that's giving her age away, wow. But... yeah, I think with Jack, we were in a situation where we'd been married 4 years with your mum.
Yep.
We didn't actually think we could have kids, because even though we knew we wanted kids and obviously we'd like a family, and we had a ball, you know, 4 years before we had kids. It's great. Yeah. Just a heads up, everybody, if you want to do anything, get it done before you have kids. But yeah, we had a good time, and we came to the point where we thought we would like a family, but your mum, because of, you know, woman's position, we didn't think she could have kids.
Not to dive too deep, was that like because of an age thing or a medical thing? Or
medical.
Okay.
Yeah, monthlies and whatever were all over the place. So much so that just the history to do with your bro, we'd been to see a gynecologist in Burton, and she tended to be all over the place with her monthlies and whatever. But he put her on, I suppose it was like the fertility pill, really, which is supposed to regulate your monthly cycle. So she'd been taking this for some time. No, let me get this right. We actually thought, we had a
conversation. Hold on, change everything.
Yeah, rewind that. we initially went to see him because, say, as a gynecologist, we thought she may have more of an underlying problem, like cysts on her ovary or something like that. You know, it was obviously quite worrying, difficult time to go through, you know, because, say, we've been married 4 years, but your mum was quite young when I met her. And she was at that point, I think she was 23, would she be, you know, so I'd known her since she was about 18 or 19.
You tell me, you're looking at me for the answers.
I forget you were there, you know. No. Yeah, so we went to see this guy in a college, Mr. Smith, I think his name was, seemed to be cool. Nice guy. Thought she might have cysts on her ovary or so. Anyway, he put us on this, put your mum on this fertility pill to regulate her monthlies. And I got called in one day into hospital because she'd gone in for a checkup. And I remember going in and they were all around the bedside. And the nurse said, oh, you need to come and see us, Mr. Mudge, because we've got something to tell you. Well, obviously, I feared the worst because we thought that there may be an underlying problem. You know, who knows? And they were doing this bit with the, you know, where they put the jelly on or the gel.
The ultrasound.
Ultrasound. And he said, what do you think it is?
I'm not the doctor here.
No, I don't really know. But then it turns out it was Jack. It was your bro.
What, so she was pregnant by that point then?
She was nearly 4 months pregnant.
What, you didn't have...
We had no idea. And of course, I guess the possibility would have been that not only would have had Jack, but we could have had four or five others, you know, jeez, because it was a fertility pill that she was on. As it turned out, it was just your brother.
I guess with a track record of irregular cycles, that you almost don't kind of consider it. It's just, we've just missed a month or three.
Exactly. Well, yeah, because it was nothing unusual.
Yep.
You know, she we could go for literally months without having anything.
Wow.
And then, you know, it would be perhaps a bad one or not much at all. So it wasn't unusual to go for 3 or 4 months. But as I say, we got called in and it turns out, here we go, this is Jack, all systems go, you're on for having a baby, which was fantastic because after 4 months of thinking, that, 4 years of thinking that we couldn't have children and wanting kids, you know, it was quite something really to find out that your mum was expecting. And in those days, as you know, I was running a business, still am running a business, you know, cleaning contractor. And it's tough, you know, it's hard making ends meet. So
before we get on to obviously the main event of the middle son, what was it like having Jack then and trying to run a business at the same time?
Tough. Yeah, very tough. Because your mum... She'd been working for, I met her, she was working for William Davis in Loughborough, doing computer inputting and whatever down there. Then she went to work for Blaws in Measham, John Blaws. And as is the case with lots of families, you know, you're quite reliant on your second income. So your mum, even though, as I say, wasn't planned, we didn't go in for it and have a big pot of money that we saved up ready to have kids.
Yeah, because I mean, normally you can't plan it down to the minuscule detail, but I guess you normally say, okay, we're kind of at that time where we're, like, for example, me and Emmy, we knew we were ready to start trying for a baby, so at least you then psychologically are preparing yourself for the potential future.
Yeah, well... There was no preparation. we were chucked right in at the deep end. And as I say, at that time, the business was starting to... I think I set my first part-timer on a young worker scheme back in 1983, I think it was. And, you know, you used to get a bit back off the government at the time for setting somebody on. And Jack came along in 1985. I started the business in 1981. So we were 2 years into that. Well, you know, anybody who's running their own business will know that in the early days, that takes up a lot of your time, just getting it off the ground and trying to get things moving. So, you know, finding out that we were expecting and Jack was coming along at that point was pretty tough, really. But, you know, it's nothing that lots of other people haven't been through, I'm sure. So he used to come along what used to happen, this wasn't so much right in the early stages.
Disclaimer. By the way, we like to give pop tips out on the show. I don't know if you've listened to a few of them before, but every pop tip that we give out comes with a big old asterisk saying that if you take any of these tips and advice into the real world, we are not liable for anything. We try to merely share our experiences. And if someone wants to learn a lesson, that's on that.
That's great. Yeah. But we're not taking responsibility for anybody else's business. Yeah, so Jack came along, and as I say, I was kind of working hard, trying to work in all hours, because the problem with cleaning, it's very unsociable. You know, you tend to have to work early in the mornings before offices open, or at night, or at weekends. That's just the nature of the job. So what it was, we picked up a cleaning contract for cleaning the shopping centre down in the town in Burton-on-Trent,
yep.
In Worthington Walk it was. And I met this guy, and I bought the property developer, Ken Grundy his name was, and I bought a scrubber dryer, which is a piece of kit that scrubs the floor, and you walk along with it, scrubbing the floor, and then it wet vacuums the floor afterwards. It's like a big box with two scrubbing heads on the front and on the back. And as Jack got a little bit older, he was 18 months old, because we had to do this thing on a Saturday morning. It was 6 days a week, 7 days if we're going in scrubbing, the floor out after busy period. Jack used to come along at 18 months old. You couldn't do this nowadays. You're a bit really against health and safety and everything.
That's what's changed, health and safety regulations.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. But it was great. So I used to sit your bro actually on the scrubber dryer, because it was quite flat, this 18 months old, and he was at that height, I was walking along, and I'd got my boiler suit on and my collar and tie, scrubbing the floor in Worthington Walk, and people used to walk through on a Saturday morning, and they used to love him. Everybody got to know us.
So people would see you then?
Oh, of course, yeah. Well, it's the nature of the thing. You can do it now, because, of course, it even though the floors are damp, they're not overly wet. You just leave them slightly wet. So I used to walk up and down with this, a bit like mowing a lawn along the mall. And Jack would sit on top of the machine. So we'd take him to work with us. This is before you came along. And people got to know us, and they got to know Jack, But it was tough, a lot of hours working late. And in the early days... not to be recommended, but it's just the facts of life. Sometimes you got to go to work and earn a living, and maybe if I've got any regrets, it's perhaps that because of working that I missed out on some of the time then as a dad.
Yeah,
just trying to make ends meet, because you obviously lost your mum's wage, while you were young at the youngsters.
So fast forward a few years then, what was it like when? Same sort of question. So what was I planned? What were the circumstances of going for a second baby? Was it a bit more, were you aware that it was going to happen this time around, or was it another surprise in the same respect that Jack was?
Well, I know how it happened, I can't remember the honest answer to that. Did we plan it? I don't think we did. We knew we wanted another child, because it's nice to be having a family.
I guess you don't planning is such it sounds very hyper specific. I guess it's more your willingness to have a second. It's like, shall we go for it or shan't we, and then let's see what happens, right?
Yeah, shall we go for
it? Am I putting words in your mouth? You tell me.
Well, you don't know anymore. I can't ever remember a time.
I don't need to know.
No, this is too much information. Where we had a spell where we were physically trying, for a baby, if that's what you're referring to.
I don't know anymore.
No. You came along, not by accident, because I say maybe we weren't taking precautions, because having gone through the period of time where we didn't think we could have any kids, we maybe felt, after that still that was an issue, that we because your mum would come off this fertility pill at
the
time.
So you were playing it fast and loose.
So we probably were actually, we weren't taking precautions or anything, but then... a couple of years went, because it's 2 years. But you remember?
It's like 3.5 years, I think.
Is it?
Yeah. Because today I'm 31. Jack's 34.
When he returns,
he's 35 at the end of the year. So.
Okay, yeah. So three. So it was still a fair while, isn't it? Because of course, then 9 months you got to take off that as well from when you were conceived. But we weren't actually taking precautions, but we were happy. Certainly. you know, if it happened, it happened. Mm-hmm. It was great because we didn't want Jack to be on his own. And you came along and we were made up, you know, the fact that we were
changed everything.
Little Mudge number two.
So what was the birth like for that one? Because I know that it wasn't as plain sailing as Jack, was it?
No, you were a nightmare. the thing about Jack was, right, your mum, you know, we all know your mum wasn't thin as a pin. You know, she, at the time, she'd put a little bit of weight on. But she didn't have actually any problems. Sometimes they say that you have your first child and it makes the way for all the others. Well, the first one, I know Emmy had quite a tough time, didn't she, with Elliot? And that's par for the course, really. You know, often mums will have a difficult time with the first child. But your mum actually didn't have too tough a time with Jack. She had a normal pregnancy. He was a big lad. He came along. I think Jack was eight and a half, was he? Or eight, 10?
Again, like I wasn't there.
Yeah. No, something like that. You were bigger. You were 9'2", I think, or 9'10", even might have been. Anyway, bigger than Jack.
I was in the paper either way.
But Jack, she didn't have any problems with having Jack, you know, so it was a normal birth. He was wired for sound. She had to be induced, I think, just to start him off.
That's the thing with the whole positive birthing route that we went down. Something that it sort of educated us, or skewed our perspective of, or however you want to sort of say it, but it made us aware that when you go to hospital to give birth, they sort of get you, there's a definite route that they push you down, because they're obviously trying to, like, you go to the hospital because you're there to give birth, so they try and get the ball rolling quicker, so a lot of the time you get induced, and then there's the fear that this is, when you force the idea being that when you force the pregnancy to happen, the chance of complications, in air quotes, to occur increases because you're forcing it. Mm. Whereas if you can be as natural as possible, your body knows when it's ready to give birth and all this stuff. So when you pass term or whatever the phrase is, that's when they induce you and stuff like that. But if you're not technically ready, then it can cause issues. So it seems to be that when you go to hospital, they'll force things, and then it's the worst case scenario is a cesarean. So that was something that we were really, really afraid of. We obviously wanted a midwife-led birth, but then Emmy had high blood pressure, so that wasn't possible in the end. But all in all, it worked out for us. But it's just a very scary point in time.
And that tends to be the situation that if the blood pressure, so say in your mum's case, I think that probably was why they induced her, because she'd gone the full term. Jack was obviously going to be quite a big baby. It was her first baby. and they thought, well, we don't need his cook anymore.
Yep.
so, you know, we'll just start her off. And he was wired for sound and monitored it. And he came out, you know, like back in a bus out, you know. so, you know, it was great. No problem. Now, I say all that because you were entirely different. Because if you scroll forward now to when you came along, unfortunately, we had an old-fashioned midwife, right? And what happened, Jack, they were both born at Burton. You were born at Burton and Jack was born at Burton.
So was Elliot.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah, it's great hospital. Mm-hmm. You know, I've had a couple of ops there, different things, you know, and we've nothing but good things to say about Burton. But they had a problem with a virus that was around at the time. Not COVID, but it was something like, I don't think it was MRSA, but it was one of the viruses, which meant that it had to be closed for a couple of weeks.
Wow.
So you came along and it meant that you were actually overdue. So you were 2 weeks overdue, which is unusual. They don't normally like to leave you that long. Hence, this is why you were a big lad when you eventually were born. And because they didn't want to, obviously mums and people going into hospitals and having complications, you know, having a baby's bad enough, but, you know, if you're getting all the other complications as well. So they delayed it. Now, we, because I can remember, your mum waking up in the night and we'd gone to bed, waking me up and saying, "Oh, and it, well, it's dark, you know, I'm like you, I don't like my sleep broken." One thing we can do in this family is sleep.
And you go to bed quite late as well, right? So yeah, I imagine you had another one of your standard late nights. Yeah. 3 a.m.ers.
Possibly, but night owl, yeah. But I just remember this particular night, like, oh, you know, got to go and think of stuff. No, we need to go now. And getting in the car, and suddenly realising halfway down the way to Burton that basically the car was running on fresh air.
Oh, my God.
It was on fumes. So I did say that to your mum, and I said, look, if all else fails, we can coast down the hill into Burton. Because, you know, the second one actually does come quicker. Yeah. You'll find this, you know, hopefully, that once it started off, it does happen. Now, because she'd gone 2 weeks over your mum in this situation, when the baby decides to come, it decides to come, and there's nothing you can do about it. So
I actually think that was a similar situation with Sarah, Adam and Sarah, when Reggie was born.
Yeah,
they didn't even leave the house. He actually delivered his own child.
Because we weren't quite at that point, but certainly we were. We certainly were at that point, which I'll tell you why in a minute. You didn't have to be induced, you know, whereas Jack was induced, you didn't have to be induced. So we went into hospital. We had an old-fashioned midwife. Now, it was an unusual time because, as I say, not so many people were on the wards due to the problem with the virus that was around, this MRSA or whatever it was at the time, the bug that was in the hospital. We had an old-fashioned midwife, and she used to, rather than going along with all the modern tech of attaching the wires to monitor the baby's heartbeat and things like that, she used the old-fashioned trumpet, you know, that you listen to the with gel on there and listen to the heartbeat.
Did you not? Was that not raising any red flags at the time?
No, not really. We actually had quite a bit of confidence in her. I mean, nice girl she was, you know, really, really nice woman. And, you know, I was relaxed about it because I knew what an easy time your mum had had, unusually, with Jack, your brother, on the first one. So, as I say, we were in there, you know, and I'm really dead chilled. You know, your mum, she'd got every confidence in you, missing much.
Just a pat on the back.
Yeah, you do this, falling off a log. Midwives, you know, trumpet on the valley. Yeah, everything's relaxed and all that. Anyway, we get to the point where you're starting to crown. and we suddenly realise that you were breached. The cord was round your neck.
Yep.
So every time your mum pushed, you're a bit like a yo-yo. You'd come backwards and forwards, in and out like this, which is not good because obviously if you're left in the birthing canal for too long, it can cause brain damage. And I just remember going from this really chilled out, hey, man, you know, this is great, you'll be fine, you know, Lorna, feeling suddenly, wow, this is not good, not great. And half a dozen nurses came piling in from nowhere. She called them in, and it was like lights were flashing, you know, and there was a real, where we'd got a real problem. Anyway, they managed to eventually get you out. I think you'd got your arm around as well, and it was around your neck and your arm.
Wasn't
that
arm around my head and cord around the neck.
Cord around the neck, which perhaps explains quite a bit now, actually.
Still sleep like that, actually. Sometimes wake up.
It's amazing, isn't it? You might be to do that. You don't know. Yeah.
Reminisce.
Yeah. They eventually get you out, and that took some time to get you out. And the nurses were telling the old-fashioned midwife off for not using it. She said, this is why we tell you to use the technology which we've got. If you'd have done this, it wouldn't have happened. Which I felt was a bit harsh, you know, but it was
when you've got the gear,
use
the gear though is probably the
But you know, she'd certainly had a long.
She's obviously a seasoned vet, right? That's exactly. Stuck in her old, very old school ways.
And sometimes old school can be better. You know, there's different.
That is true, actually, because when they were taking Emmy's blood pressure, they have like an electrical one now, so they just put her arm in it, press a button, and it does the whole thing itself. obviously she had high blood pressure anyway, but what they did every time is they would revert back to the old school pump and the little watch, because they always use the same line, every one of them. It's like, oh, sometimes the mechanical one comes out with a higher reading. So obviously there is some truth to the old school methods are a little bit more accurate potentially. Yeah.
And sometimes people want to do things more naturally, aren't they? Which I can understand. But certainly she had no history of losing kids through, you know, making bad decisions or anything like that. You just came along.
That was her last day.
it was purely, no, I think she could happen or continued practice some time afterwards. But it was an issue, you know, that could have been avoided had you been... the monitor's been put on your head. But anyway, you came out and it was pretty scary, really, because we both thought you were dead. Because when this baby comes out and you were like a licorice all sort, because all the blood had been, with being corded, had been pumped up to your head, and it was in your feet as well. So the bit in the middle was white, you know, you got blue. And they give you this, I think it's a vitamin K injection, which releases a
Is
lot of the blood.
Is it vitamin K? It's either K or D.
Yeah, yeah. And anyway, your mum thought you were dead as well, but we both thought you were dead. But after what seemed an absolute eternity, you started crying. Which was really quite emotional, you know, because as I say, having gone from being very relaxed about something to being really, really stressed about the whole situation, and then finding, you know, you got another lovely bouncing, well, not little boy, big boy, because say, I think you were 9, 10. You were quite wizened. I remember the doctor saying to me, oh, look at him, he's overcooked, isn't he? You know, because all the flesh. Jack was quite plump when he came out and normal, whereas you, because you'd gone a fortnight over, yours was hanging on you, you know.
What, so I didn't have, like, because the babies have, like, extra fat, right? They're just a little chubby, but was I, so was I skinny or?
I think your skin was a bit floppy. not as plump as a baby, you know. Not terribly, but, you know, he obviously felt it was like that way, because you've been overdone, really, or left for longer than would normally have been the acceptable way. Now, whether or not that was a reason why you got into difficulties, and say you got your arm up and you got corded, I don't know. But the upshot of that was that, as you know, you won't remember this, but you came out and you had quite a few breathing difficulties at the time, and you got diagnosed as being an apnea baby, which really meant that... you're considered more susceptible to cot death syndrome. You stop breathing. You'll breathe normally for a while, then all of a sudden stop breathing.
Wow.
And
how long did that go on for?
Well, I think the first week we realised you had a problem.
So you didn't know that straight away then, or?
Your breathing was erratic.
Okay.
So your mum obviously... I talked to the midwife and the people at the hospital, and they said, yeah, we think you need to have this monitor fitted, which was a little box of tricks about 6-7 inches by about inch and a half. And it had a little wire that came out of it with a pressure pad that sat on your tummy. And that used to, we should sit that in the cot with you at night, which meant that as your breathing, your rib cage and that rose and fell, the monitor would be fine. It wouldn't go off.
Yep.
But the minute you stopped breathing, it registered with the monitor and it went off like a microwave or a smoke alarm. And I can remember, I mean, this was a really stressful time for me and your mum, because on numerous nights you would stop breathing, and we used to have to go, we had to give you the kiss of life your mum gave you the kiss of life on one or two occasions, but we'd almost get stuck in the door. We were both rushing to try and get you away, which was easy enough to do because you could blow on you and start your breathing again. But, you know, that was pretty scary, really. So those early months that went by, with you not breathing and being on this apnea monitor and having had a hard time with you with the birth, really, you know, it puts you in touch with yourself and makes you realise that having kids is great, but, you know, they come with a bit, with a bit of a health warning.
Yeah, well, yeah, I just remember with Elliot, it was, like I say, we were like, we built it up to be super positive and everything was hopefully going to be okay, and then it felt like a cascade of events that just kept, everything just kept going wrong, and that it was very scary. Even once he was born, obviously Emmy lost a bit of blood, so once he was out, and then Emmy was just like pale as a ghost, and then they put the baby in the little incubator or whatever it is where incubator. They just keep them warm and all that, and obviously there's a rush of doctors and nurses coming in and doing all sorts of stuff, and it was like, I thought that he was going to come out and then we're good, but anything can happen. And we had a listener, John, who emailed in as well. He was speaking about their little baby that's due soon, and there's a potential for Down syndrome, and one of the things that me and Adam were saying that is that, like, you can't worry about things until they happen, because anything can happen that you just need to, like, tackle it as it does, because they'll keep you on your toes.
And some things in life, it's not the things you worry about that get you in it. They're the least of your problems.
Yeah.
It's the ones that come left field that you've never, ever considered that knock you for six and just, you know, take the wind out of your sails. Mm-hmm. You can end up worrying or fretting about lots of stuff that never, ever happens.
Mm-hmm. So that's Jack and that's me. Obviously, we've got Ollie.
Yeah,
who is the youngest of the trio. Now he turns 17 this year, so there's a big age gap with the three of us. Between Ollie and me and Jack. What happened there? I mean, I don't want to know exactly what happened, but, like, was that feels like more of a surprise than potentially the others.
I know some people say, "Oh, it was a mistake." It wasn't. Ollie was a surprise. He was a big surprise. Interestingly, your granddad, my dad, I'm the eldest of five in our family. Well, there is a similar age gap between me and my youngest brother. You know, your grandma and granddad were together 40-odd years. But my dad had had mumps, so he thought he was clear. He thought he couldn't have kids. And then Jonathan came along, who's my youngest brother. Well, in your situation, Oliver's situation, this was very much a surprise, because your mum was 41 at the time when she conceived Ollie, and certainly not planned for. I said, I only put it in a little bit, you know. It's one of those things, isn't it, that comes along and it happens. I think what was happening at the time, joking aside, I think your mum would come was changing a pill or something like that. She'd come off, and we had one slip. Literally one slip, can you believe that? Along 9 months later comes Oliver, which has been absolutely fantastic. We love him to bits, you know, and that has made a huge difference, you know, certainly at this time of life. And maybe things are, you know, on the wind down, you're calming down, you know, people have got more time. But and thinking back to what you're saying about your listener, was it John who emailed in?
Yeah.
He was saying there's a possibility of Down syndrome. What happens is, getting older, that is a possibility with mums that have children later on in life. So I think they gave this injection called amniocentesis, I think it's called.
Not sure.
I think that's the name for it, where you have an injection to just check whether the child has got... we do have that Oliver anyway, but, you know, some people, it gives them the opportunity if they don't want that situation to make a decision not to proceed. But in our case, you know, whatever it was, I think the odds are about one in 80 it comes to.
Yeah, so I think, so there's it's called a nuptial translucency test, which, where, so when they do the scan, they measure, like, the gap on the back of their neck or something like that.
Yeah.
And if it's within a certain size,
yeah,
that can infer a higher chance.
Yes. Yeah.
And in John's case, for example, it was like 1 in 100.
Right.
Okay. Like that. So it's less than one in a hundred,
yeah,
which is like it is pretty much nothing, right? But yeah, obviously, you have to tell people if there's a chance of something. Like if you look at paracetamol or something, normally there's a list of side effects and things like that.
So
they have to tell you everything. But
we'd have proceeded anyway. But it was something that we were given or asked for us to have.
So did you say you did that test?
Yeah, though? Yeah. And as I say, at the time, we're told the odds are about 1 in 80. Mm-hmm. There was a possibility, but Ollie came along and he was absolutely right as rain, you know. Mm-hmm. And he's been a fantastic addition to the Mudge Clan. He needs a slap now and again, but he's,
yeah. I think we all do sometimes, though, don't we?
But the thing about having kids is, and I feel this, you know, because we love you all dearly, and you're all very different, you know. I mean, I can say this, you know, we all get on and we're all pretty open, and you know, we take the rip out of each other, and it's great. And we have our moments, you know, where we fall out, you know, and we'll have a frank exchange of words, don't we, and do that. But I think, certainly from my point of view, I mean, Oliver later on in life, as I've got older, has probably kept us young, you know, and made us, I think you get more selfish as you're getting older, mm-hmm. you know, more self-concerned about doing stuff. Which,
well, I guess that's kind of the next phase though, right? You have the kids grow up, you then become a couple again.
Yeah.
And that's when you just start doing, like you say, doing your own thing.
Yeah, but and maybe having a bit more me time, mm-hmm. you know. But, you know, I wouldn't swap anything for the world, really, and I genuinely mean that. You know, you've all been great kids. You know, you've never brought us any trouble, any problems, and there's nothing better than having a family, you know. It's costly, it's expensive having kids, and certainly these days, and there's many sacrifices that you have to make financially, time, emotionally, all kinds of stress, you know, lots of things that come with having a family. But, you know, the rewards far outweigh those, you know. So, and being a dad, I don't think it's anything compares, really.
So funnily enough, a friend and listener and watcher of the show, Alex Rolls, I think you might know Alex.
Yeah,
actually.
Yeah,
hello,
Alex.
I told him that we were going to jump on the mics and that. And one of the things he wanted to know, and I do as well, and something I'm going to ask Adam as well, a similar question, but he wanted to know if you had any tips for dealing with, when you've got a couple of kids that are just being little shits and they're fighting. Because I know me and Jack, for example, have had many a scuffle. What's it like when the kids are just doing your nutting and they're swinging pool cues at each other on holiday?
Yeah.
How'd you deal with a couple of little shits?
You see, I've got to be careful. You know, I'm not... there'd been all kinds of people who claim to be experts on how to bring up kids, and I know you can get pattern behaviour. You know, if your dad's been aggressive and he's hit you or things like that, then that can be, you know, come through in your children, they say. I personally, and this is just my opinion, and I don't expect anybody to agree with me or anything like that, I don't think a little slap now and again, not talking, you know, knocking your kids around, it is a bad thing, you know, but there needs to be boundaries. I think that's what kids need to understand, that there needs to be boundaries. And you're right, on the occasion I think you're referring to, we'd gone down and we were staying in a hotel down in Bournemouth, and it was a nice hotel, and there was a pool table in the middle of the lounge, and I think you were probably, well, what would you be, maybe 6 and 9, maybe, you think? Something like 3 years between you, does that sound about right?
Yeah, we were young, definitely young.
Yeah, quite young.
Yeah.
And I remember there's some convention at the time and you were playing pool on the table, which was great. But then all of a sudden, as happened more in the younger days, you used to fall out with each other. But this particular day, you started hitting each other with the pool cues. So I marched you out of the room, you know, finger up the nose and say, you do that again, you know, and you'll be going to bed. And fully expected you to calm down and get on with the game and there'd be no more problems. Well, the minute you got back in the room, and this was a pack, this room was, you know, it was absolutely full of people. So you were causing quite a scene, but you were right at each other's throats. So that particular day, I remember marching you off to your bedroom and giving you a good hiding. But, you know, you have
fully
to say
deserved
you,
as well,
you deserved it. And, you know, and as I say, I'm not saying we should, you know, hit the kids. And hopefully, you know, you don't think I've been too hard on you in that respect. You know?
No, I think it's the intention, right? Like, when it comes to whether people agree with it or not is obviously...
Yeah, because it is open for debate. Definitely.
But I think it's like it's more the concept of punishment.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, some people will say, well, you should be able to punish someone without having to lay a hand on them. But I only remember being smacked probably like 3 times.
That's right, yeah.
But I think knowing what a smack was going to be like was enough of a deterrent, because you used to always do the count to 3.
Yeah, that's right.
So, looking back, I imagine number 2 was a very long 2. It wasn't like a 1, 2, 3. It was like 1, 2, stop crying. And it was like...
But
because we knew
that... You've had to smack somebody at some point to get to that point where they know what the 1, 2, and 3 is going to lead to. Yeah. You know, so it's like any deterrent. You know, there has to be something at the end of it.
Yeah.
But you were good kids. You never ever caused that much of a problem where you took it to number 3. Mm-hmm. On that occasion with the pool cues that night, you did take it to number 3.
It's weird because I actually, like, looking back at mine and Jack's relationship when we were younger, we'd get on, but then it would just blow up.
Yeah.
And I don't even know what, like, Jack just had like a skill where even at the dinner table, because he'd sit opposite, he could just look at me with that look in his eye.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, Mom, he's doing it. He's doing it again. And I'd just flip out. So and it was only when
he's baiting you.
Bait me, and Mum would be like, "Don't rise to it." I'm like, "I'm doing it though." And I'd lose my shit.
Yeah.
But he, it was always when I got to about 18, it was only from that point where we kind of just, we're both grown up by that point, right? Mm. But it was only when I was 18 where we sort of got on properly as sort of a young adults or whatever, but and obviously we don't really fall out anymore. Well, we don't fall out.
No, I think you're getting really well now.
But I think boys, my understanding is boys can be a bit of a terror, right? When they're young, if you've got a couple of lads.
I think it's hard to be, you know, everybody's different, aren't they? You know, and people, you know, sometimes it's genetic. you know, some people are more laid back, you know, some people are more naturally aggressive, you know. As I say, you've all been good lads, you know, and you've not caused any problems. But I don't claim to be an expert on giving advice on how to bring kids up, you know.
There's actually a TV program on at the moment about raising kids, different techniques and things like that. And they're up there. It's like some sort of weird competition or something. I don't know. It's bizarre.
I know people will say about the naughty step, aren't they?
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, people knowing the bound, you know, spend. My dad used to send me up into the bedroom for hours on end if I'd done something wrong. I personally don't think that. I can remember looking out the window and thinking, oh dear, you know, just cut to the chase, give me a slap, let's get it over and done with quick, you know, because in some ways that's a little bit more torturous, you know, it's drawing it out and making you think about things, you know, for longer. When you know, if we're straightforward, you know, I think in any time in life, listen, we all do it now. We know when we're out of line, don't we? Or when we need a bit of a tightener or just, you know, pulling up for something. And, you know, the time should befit the crime, really.
And I also think one thing to make clear as well is the for anyone that might be against smacking, I think what you've got to remember is that the smack is offset by a lot of love. So it's not like dad's never around. He's only there to give a pasting and it happens all the time. Like it was very few and far between, but you were a loving dad that was around and we always have a good time most of the time. So it's that, and I think it's that, contrast that we all get on all the time, and then all of a sudden we've swung cues at each other, and then we've earned a smack. Yeah. So,
yeah. I mean, that's not for me to say, Harry. But honestly, it's for you to, because it, like,
I definitely don't remember it. Yeah,
you know,
I definitely don't look back and think we used to just get beat all the time, because I wouldn't be speaking to you now. Do you know what I mean?
I
don't think I've grown up. Tapped or anything like that. I don't know.
You seem to have grown up pretty well adjusted, but at the same time, you can't say that we've got everything right, because people that certainly don't always agree with physical punishment. And I'm again, you know, I'm stressing that it's not something that we'd recommend. But you know, personally speaking, you know, I look at some of the other measures, and. You know, I don't know as they're necessarily always as successful as people say either, you know. So, and every child's different, you know, so you have to make, you know, listen, you don't come with a kit of instructions, you know, or something which says, look, if your child does this on this and this again, on a manual, you're making this up as you go along. Yeah. A lot of the time, you're learning as you go along. Kids, every child's different. Mm-hmm. Every personal circumstances are different. You know, if you've just come in from a bad day at work, when you're stressed, you're not making a lot of money, you've got issues like that. Sometimes you're having a bad day, people will kick the dog, you know, and that happens in certain families, you know, where sadly, the parents were taken out on the kids because of issues they've got themselves, you know. And it's about everybody trying to understand each other, where they're coming from. And hopefully in our situation, things haven't been too bad. We've been lucky, maybe, you know. But that's not so. You've always got it right. But, you know, I think this bit is about giving advice on parenting. You know, I remember once one of the mates that I play with in the band, play guitar with, and we were down the pub, and his little lad was giving it this. And I've always considered this guy to be the nicest, you know, meek and mild brother you'd ever have to wish to meet, you know. And I just happened to say, do you not think he needs to? And he absolutely bristled back at me, said, don't you tell me how to give my kids what I should be doing. And I'm thinking, I don't give advice, really. All I can say is, this is what we did, you know.
I mean, it's because it's very personal, right? Not that anyone really knows what the right answer is, but you know more than anyone else how to handle your kids.
I think it is something, certainly, maybe as you get older, you mellow anyway.
I remember when Ollie was younger that how you treated him compared to how you treated me and Jack, it was different. I remember us saying, you've gone soft, you have, Dad.
That's just age, mate. That is. That's just calming down, but I think as well, some of the things that we're saying, because it was tough, you know, in the early days with having a business and, you know, all the other external pressures. You know, sometimes it's not what you've got in your own family. It's all the other crap that comes from outside that you have to deal with on a day-to-day basis. And, you know, you're just doing your best with each other. But the tendency the concern is to not try to bring that home and take it out on your family, you know. And I say, one of my regrets, I think more than anything else sometimes, is the time that I didn't always spend, not so much with Oliver. I think I've had more time as I've got older, but with Jack and yourself in the early days, because unfortunately keeping a business going is quite absorbing, you know, and I feel some of it I missed out on, you know, but hey, you know, it's spilt milk, you know. We hopefully get on now and I can help you out with Elliot.
Yeah.
And,
yeah, exactly.
And we've always got on, but, you know, we can do more things together.
I think that's something that I'm aware of as well with Elliot, because, and me and Adam have spoken on the show about it, especially when it comes to work, it's very easy to think. So, like, for example, Adam obviously is building the business that I work for, but he's sunk so much time into it, and with the intention that if I work hard now, I'll have all the time in the future to spend with the family. And I know that he has coaching, and his coach said, but if one of your goals in life is to spend more time with the family, why are you working so hard on the business now to spend time with them in the future? Why don't you just spend the time with the family now? And from just listening to the stuff that he is going through and learning from, I've sort of learned myself, is obviously we have, I do long hours at work and things like that, but like I've make it clear, I make a point now to not work over the weekends, just so we've always got Saturday and Sunday, and just spend time in the mornings before I go to work with the family. We all get in bed and things like that. So
I think work-life balance is one of the hardest things to achieve for anybody. You know, and it's a bit like a guy who works all his life and saves, you know, I'm going to save everything to the day I retire at 65. And he gets to 65 and he's not spent any, not gone on a holiday, and he's not, you know, had a season ticket to watch Leicester, or he's not done anything, you know, but when I'm 65, I'm going to really enjoy. And he kills over the next day. Mm. You know, you can't, in life, you can never get that time back. You know, once the sand in the egg timer has gone through down to the bottom, it's gone. You know, so you got to try somewhere along the line, enjoy yourself along the way, you know. And there's a lot of things, it's not about money, you know, it's not about, you just got to, it can be difficult, but you have to make time. If your family really does come first and they're the important things in your life, then you just got to try to do your best to make time for it. But it's not easy.
No, definitely not. I feel like we could keep talking for hours, but what we'll do is we'll wrap it up there because we're at about 50 minutes or so.
Okay.
We'll definitely do a follow-up. Hopefully, everyone that's listening and watching has thoroughly enjoyed this. I know I have. Definitely get you back on the show, Mark, because you've been a great guest.
Thanks for having me. Yeah.
Guys, thank you so much for listening and watching. If you haven't already, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast. Head over to YouTube, subscribe, like, comment, share, and all that good stuff. If you want to get in touch, you can email dadknowsbest@nbs.fm. Until next time, guys. See you later.